I really like these volcanoes,
he says, stopping at the pictures by the door.
You don't see enough volcanoes these days.
Vodka, cranberry juice. Damn, there's something else.
Miss McIntyre says to herself.
Sorry, what was that?
I was just remembering what you said before, about the earth being forged out of all these grand forces. It's true. You look at these pictures and you realize we're walking through the set of this incredible epic they stopped filming 100 million years ago.
Quantro!
She exclaims and returns to the carrier bags.
Quantro, Quantro. Oh, to hell with it.
She takes a swig from the vodka bottle and passes it to him.
Come on, it'll warm you up.
Cheers, so,
he says. She makes a fist and playfully punches the base of the bottle. He drinks. The vodka burns all the way down to his stomach.
I can't hear the music at all now,
he says to distract himself from the discomfort.
We'll go back in a minute.
She hops up on the teacher's desk and crosses her legs beneath her. From here, she regards Howard mockingly, like an imp on a toadstool.
So you're nostalgic for the Paleozoic now, is that it?
Definitely quieter these days. No new mountains, same old continents and oceans. Occasional earthquake kills a few thousand. That's as much drama as we get.
She receives this with an amused smile, like someone holding a royal flush in a poker game from matchsticks.
Dramatic things can still happen,
she says.
All this for a start.
She gestures behind her at the blackboard, on which is written, Global warming. Deforestation leads to desertification. Leads to loss of habitats. Leads to decrease in biodiversity. Leads to mass extinction. Leads to rising temperatures. Leads to drought. Leads to crop failure. Leads to polar ice caps melting. Leads to rising seas. Leads to flooding. Leads to diversion of Gulf Stream. Leads to glaciation. Leads to ice age.
An ice age. That would be dramatic enough for most people, no? Or Dublin, London, New York being underwater?
That's true,
Howard says.
Some scientists think we're already past the point of no return. They give the world as we know it another 15 years. We could be the very last generations of the species.
She reels this off in a conversational tone, the same mischievous light flickering in her eyes, as if it's some rambling shaggy dog joke, not for young ears.
The boys take it very seriously, recycling their Coke cans, using energy-efficient light bulbs. Yesterday they were all writing letters to the Chinese ambassador. The Chinese government want to build a dam in a UNESCO heritage site. It's going to destroy the homes of millions of people, including the Naxi. They're one of the world's last surviving matriarchies, Howard. Did you know that? The boys were so angry. But most people seem to be able to let that stuff just slide over them.
They don't have you to inspire them,
Howard says.
I suppose we can't really conceive of our way of life ever changing,
she says, ignoring his clunky flattery.
Let alone coming to an end. It's just like the boys here doing stupid things. You know, climbing electricity pylons, jumping their skateboards off 10-foot walls, because they can't imagine getting hurt. They think they'll go on forever. So do we. But nothing goes on forever. Civilization ends. Everything ends. That's what you teach them in history class, isn't it?
She utters these words softly, like a lullaby. Her stockinged knee is rested against his thigh. The air seems to shoot with sparks.
History teaches us that history teaches us nothing,
Howard remembers.
That doesn't say much for history teachers, does it?
Standing before her at the top of the class, Howard is aware, suddenly, of the empty rows of pupils' desks behind him, that nobody in the entire world knows where they are.
You teach me something, so?
He goads her gently.
Educate me.
Her eyes wander ceilingward as she makes a play of scaring up a thought. Then, leaning forward, she confides in a whisper,
I don't think you're in love with your girlfriend anymore.
This stings, but he keeps smiling.
You can see into my heart now.
You're easy to read,
she says, tracing a fingertip over his face.
It's all right here.
Well, maybe I can see into your heart, too,
he retorts.
Oh, yeah? What do you see there?
I can see you want me to kiss you.
She laughs coyly and swings her legs off the desk.
That's not what you see.
She retreats to the far side of the room, smoothing down her dress. Then, in an amicable, impersonal voice, like a television interviewer putting a fresh question to her guest, she says,
Tell me why you left the stock market to become a teacher. Did you suddenly feel the urge to do something meaningful? Had you become disillusioned with the pursuit of wealth?
Howard understands that this is a hoop he must jump through. He has erred, and this conversation, artificial as it is now the only possible route back to what those lips seemed to promise a few seconds ago. He takes a moment to draw breath, consider his tactics, then, keeping his position by the desk, responds in the same pleasantly neutral tone.
It was more that the pursuit of wealth became disillusioned with me.
Burnout,
she says expressionlessly. Howard shrugs. He is realizing that this is still too sensitive for him to be ironic and offhand about.
It happens. It's a stressful job. It's not for everybody.
The people whose money it was weren't so philosophical.
Is that why they call you Howard the Coward?
No.
Was it something to do with what happened in Dalkey Quarry?
Her eyes narrow in on him, predatorily.
The bungee jump, where your friend got hurt?
He just smiles.
Were you the one who was supposed to jump? Is that it?
She turns away and continues, in the same bland TV interviewer voice.
Haunted by your reputation, you failed at your job in London and came home, resolving to live a worthy but risk-free life, and so you became a history teacher.
She leans up against the door, her eyes gleaming at him through the shadows.
Where you always know the ending, and nothing's ever going to jump out at you. Like walking through a set from an incredible epic that finished shooting years and years ago.
It flashes through his mind that she might hate him. This doesn't seem an impediment to what they are about here.
Different jobs suit different people,
he says amiably.
You thought about being a teacher once?
I thought about being a lot of things.
She agrees.
But I never had any vocation. You have to actively want to be a teacher. You don't have to actively want to be a consultant, because they pay you so much. They provide the motivation for you. It's much easier.
And yet here you are.
Yeah, well, I needed a change. Change is stimulating, don't you agree?
She has folded her hands behind her back and angles her chin away from him. He takes a step towards her, as towards a dark precipice. His movements seem automatic, as if he is a character he is reading about in a story.
Didn't someone say once that being bored is the one unforgivable sin?
I think it was being boring.
Same difference,
she says, resting her head back against the door.
The world is so huge. So many things to do and see. And for us, in the West, with more money and power and freedom than any other people in history...
She shakes her head.
To be bored is really a crime. It's an insult to everyone who doesn't have money and power and freedom.
She looks at him again.
Don't you think we have a duty to do whatever it takes? Not to be bored?
The last of these words are uttered into, and the rest of her philosophy lost inside, Howard's mouth. Her body twines around him, He pushes her against the blackboard, her pelvis mashing into his. The words warming desertification, flooding extinction, smeared into illegibility by her back. She bites his lips. Her hands glide up his chest to grip his shoulders. She exhales involuntarily, a deep grunt, surprisingly masculine, as the heel of his hand grinds momentarily between her legs, then propels him backwards until he hits the teacher's desk. He climbs up on it. She climbs onto him. Outside, the storm has finally blossomed. It roars, howls, thrashes against the window, like something out of the Paleozoic, or an epic movie. And as the demonic machinery of hands, mouths, hips takes over, Howard, perhaps not quite at the level of consciousness, but some substratum just below it, finds himself back again, as he has been on so many days and nights, at the edge of a windswept rock face, in a half ring of shadowed faces, a hand holding out to him a slip of paper on which is written his own name, like a scales weighing up his soul.
http://www.bbc.co.uk/science/goodmorningtomorrow.htm. We're very pleased to have Professor Hideo Tamashii of Stanford University with us to answer your questions on parallel universes and the stranger-than-fiction world of M-theory. Crystal.
You talk a lot about other dimensions that are too small for us to see. That doesn't make much sense.
Professor Tamashii.
You're right, Crystal. It doesn't. Higher dimensions are counterintuitive because our brains are biologically hardwired to perceive the world around us as three dimensions of space plus one of time. However, four dimensions of space-time are not enough to explain the creation and makeup of the universe. We may not be able to see them, but higher dimensions, or hyperspace, allow us to explain phenomena that would otherwise remain a mystery. M-theory describes the movement of membranes through these dimensions, some very small, like particles, some very large, like universes. In this way, it presents the possibility of a bridge between the subatomic world and the macro world.
Bust a move.
Where do these membranes come from?
Professor Tamashii.
That's a good question, Buster. M-theory maintains that a multiverse consists of membrane universes floating like bubbles in nothing. Each bubble forms for free as a quantum fluctuation in nothing. Universes may be created all the time in this way.
Stanford bound.
Tamashii-san, it is a great honor to speak to you. My question is this. Is it possible for a human being to travel through hyperspace to one of these proximate universes?
Professor Tamashii.
Well, Stanford, Einstein's equations do permit the possibility of jumping into hyperspace through a wormhole to reach another universe. However, our present technology does not supply enough energy to open up such a wormhole.
Stanford bound.
What about pre-existing gateways, e.g. black holes?
Professor Tamashii.
According to the solutions we have for black holes at present, this is certainly a theory. The short answer is that we just don't know whether or not this would be possible. Perhaps it would lead into another universe. Alternatively, it might lead to a far-off region of this universe, or back into the past. Most likely, you would not survive the journey, or if you did, you would encounter serious problems getting back.
Skippy and Laurie. What happens when you take asthma inhaler and travel pills? What happens is nothing for a little bit, and then everything starts moving in slow motion. E.g., when you step forward, it takes forever for your foot to touch the ground again, and it feels like you might keep on continuing upwards and not come down at all, like being on the moon. One great leap for man, you shout. Laurie is behind you. She is laughing and laughing. Everything has become very funny. The names of the chocolate bars stacked beside the checkout in Texaco. A man with a big nose walking his dog that also has a big nose. Even the knackers in the village that stare at you in your costumes. It's like you've stepped out of a spacecraft from thousands of years in the future, and you are walking around looking at arrowheads and woolly mammoths. The feeling is like having a fuzzy force field round you that keeps you warm and also makes you laugh. And you wonder, is it the pills or the inhaler? Or is it her because she's there? Or is this really happening?